and welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And I'm quite excited that we actually had in the past week or so some news that's sort of worth talking about.
Okay.
You know, I was thinking about talking about Kevin Hart and the Oscars. Will he, won't he, will he, won't he, will he, won't he? But to be honest, so many people have talked about it. I think we're over that. Like, there's countless columns on it.
I also barely care.
Yeah.
I think I've watched the Oscars twice in my life. I say hesitantly the second time because I may have had to get drunk to have to survive that experience. It's not for me. And I may have been in the other room playing euchre the whole time anyway, so I don't think that counts. I also don't care about Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
I feel like I probably should.
Given you were at an Oscar party and were just inconvenienced by the Oscar party.
Yeah.
You went to a party with really bad entertainment.
That sounds like an Oscar party. Yeah.
Well, I think the crux of the issue is that the LGBT folks just don't believe his apology. In particular, the wording that he used recently was, "I'm sorry if those words hurt people."
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but at no point has he demonstrated an understanding of how and why those words might. It's going through the motions.
There's a difference between saying, "I'm sorry for you being angry," and "I'm sorry for angering you." Yeah, like, those are very different.
And
very different.
It's the kind of apologies that, you know, if you're toddler would, or your small child would make them, you're like, okay, that's not a real apology.
Yeah.
let's try again. Anyway, that's been pretty much the gist of the Kevin Hart scandal.
At this point, I actually have more respect for people who are just like, yeah, no, I'm an a-hole. Like, I'm not going to apologize. I'm not apologetic. It's like, well, you know, at least we know where we stand. I know to avoid you. And at least you're consistent and true to yourself, you know. Not a great person, but yeah, that's... I see where you're coming, I guess. Bye. That's about it, you know?
He did an interview where he says, "I'm over it 14 times in the course of a 10-minute interview."
Okay.
And he just wants to get past this.
Yeah.
Because everybody's talking about it and he's so over it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a shame that he keeps doing multiple media appearances to remind people that he's so over it.
Does he bring it up or do they bring it up? Because if he brings it up, that's weird. If they bring it up, that's less weird.
Big news out of Ontario.
Okay.
We told you before about how had sued the Ontario government, claiming that by reverting back to the 2005 sex education curricula, they're actually breaching the Constitution, specifically the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Okay.
By endangering the youth.
Is that a federal level? Is there a provincial level thing for that? Or is it... No, they're talking about the federal level.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But, I mean, all laws have to comply with the Constitution, which includes, you know, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Yeah, for sure.
Except
for the LCBO. Apparently, there are exceptions that, you know, the fact that there's a limitation against state-run monopolies just doesn't count if the tax dollars are that sweet. But, you know,
yeah.
I'm not bitter. Go on.
So the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario says that Ontario children are being exposed to a greater risk of harm by reverting to the previous curriculum. They say sex education being taught now is based on a document prior to the advent of social media, same-sex marriage, and human rights protections, including how people understand consent. So the internet was barely a thing. Gays had none of the rights, and asking permission was a novel concept. And that is how that sex education was designed in a world of that.
I think asking permission was a novel concept is, you know, for the laughs, yeah, but in reality it was more like, you're an autonomous adult, you know how to say no.
But the conversation around no means no, that's only maybe 5-10 years, and the fact that...
In a formal setting, the
whole conversation around consent in 2005, even in 2015, is nowhere near where we are now, post-Me Too, post-Harvey Weinstein, it's a different world.
And now we still say, you know, like, you're an adult, you can take care of yourself, but we also say, but it's also more complicated than that. Because it is more complicated than that, but that's also true. So it's...
So although there's now no...
What does that mean?
I know. But even though there's no mention of sexual orientation, gender identity, and same-sex relationships, when you're talking about sex ed, generally, you have to be inclusive.
Okay.
Although, it's worth noting, you probably shouldn't be too inclusive, because the government also launched a snitch line where people can rat out teachers who are erring on the side of teaching about sexual orientation, gender identity, and same-sex relationships.
So they're not... is there a ban on mentioning it? So, like, if they have a sex ed class, and then they do that thing where they hand out recipe cards, and you can ask any question, and then you pull it out of the hat, and anything that isn't, like, you know, John who's sitting next to me farted, it's going to be kids being kids. But if they could just lie and be like, well, one of you has anonymously asked about gay people, so do-do-do-do-do. Like, are you banned from altogether talking about it?
That was the thing. The old curriculum had some leeway. And essentially, Doug Ford said, and I'm trying to remember correctly here, but essentially the conversation was, well, you know, they have to be inclusive still, because people were pointing out that there's massive gaps. Mm. And they were like, well, as long as they're inclusive. And then the socially conservative folks who actually painted Doug Ford into a corner to make this happen were like, whoa, 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 whoa. You're essentially saying they can teach the same curriculum, but do it in that blank spot where there's a gap.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we want at all. So they U-turned on that, well, there's leeway discussion, and we're like, no, 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 you have to abide by this curriculum until we figure it out. And that curriculum doesn't mention it. So it's an awkward position where teachers are told, in this court case, they're being told, well, you know, it's not a script. You have some leeway, but what they're also have been told is, well, if you err into this new curriculum that is now the old curriculum, but not the really old curriculum, which is now the new curriculum. If I don't know if you're confused yet,
yeah.
But if you err into the,
I am. Yeah, it's fine though. I used to know, but you just confused me.
Yeah,
that's fine.
If you start talking about stuff that like the internet and consent,
right,
which were really in the curriculum that's been replaced, then are you being inclusive or are you teaching the old curriculum? That's the, and because it's not clear, teachers are erring on the side of caution. So although they're like, well, they're going to be inclusive, it's not a script, the consequence of coming down like a ton of bricks on the no, 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 it has effectively silenced them.
But I mean, there's two sort of case studies on how to look at this. You look at the Netherlands. And the Netherlands, not only do they have all the stuff that is now banned, but they also have stuff in there about like how to interact with dating apps and, you know, the realities about if you send someone a nude photo of yourself, it's never going to go away. It's out there forever. Don't send anything that you would be embarrassed if your mom found it by accident, because the internet has a deep memory. There's the Wayback Machine. There's all sorts of ways. Like, it's almost impossible to delete something from the internet. So the Netherlands is very careful about teaching high school age children on how to interact, not just with sexuality in general, but the extension of sexuality. Like, how do you interact with Tinder like an adult? And I don't think they have like a 4-part lesson built into the curriculum, but it's an ongoing discussion. The opposite end of that is China, which teaches no sex ed whatsoever, and they have very little in terms of sexual health clinics. And currently they have an explosive rate of new HIV cases that's comparable to Africa in the early 90s. They have a terrible time with it because condoms are also not as widely available. Testing is almost impossible to get your hands on. Education on what to do, what not to do. I think I've mentioned ADV China before. It's just this channel that I really like, and it's just two dudes on motorcycles talking about living in China. Mostly I like them because they drive around the part of China where I used to live. So it's kind of like, oh, I know that mountain. But anyway, actually, I've never actually seen a specific mountain that I know. That doesn't matter. Anyway, one of them is married to a doctor, and she says that it's a weekly event almost that a pediatrician in her hospital will diagnose a woman with pregnancy who did not know how pregnancy happened. So I mean, like, it's the opposite end, and they're having problems.
Yeah, I mean, you've got school boards in the States which teach abstinence as sort of the go-to approach with.
But they still teach that pregnancy's a thing.
Yeah, but they have some of the highest rates of teenage pregnancies
and sexually
transmitted infections.
Yeah,
and it's there are things that are known to work, and there are things that are known not to work, and the evidence is in the lack of pregnant people and the lack of sexually transmitted infections.
But if we go back to the Netherlands, the age of first sexual experience in the Netherlands is younger than almost anywhere else in the world. It's usually somewhere between 14 and 17. But the age of becoming actively, sexually, regularly active is much later than almost anywhere in the world. People don't actually start becoming regularly sexually active until, like, I think it's 23. So it has a split of, like, blowjobs, what's that? Oh, did that. Okay, turns out you can get stuff from that. So I'm going to hold on until I'm a mature adult.
Yeah.
And it's really amazingly different. Like, the outcomes of the education is not what a lot of conservatives worry about. That if you teach a kid that masturbation exists, they're just gonna stiffen their sheets with body fluids. And maybe they will, but the lesson's not, like, kids will figure that out on their own. I mean, I did. Not to reveal too much about 13-year-old me,
The conservative government has said that their changes to the education was a policy decision.
Okay.
And not, it does not relate to constitutional law. They say that the Constitution of Canada does not entrench any particular school curriculum, which specifically it doesn't. It does not prescribe the sexual health topics that must be taught, the level of detail with which they must be articulated, or the particular grades in which they must be introduced. So their argument is, you know, the Constitution doesn't tell us which bits, you know, you... However, that's... They also argue that...
I mean, we also... Canada is one of the only developed countries in the world. We're actually one of the few countries in the world, full stop, that does not have a federal-level Ministry of Education. So technically, they're basically saying, well, the feds didn't care enough, so clearly... And this is one of those places where it's... I hesitate to say, at least on this point, they're not wrong. Mm-hmm. But on every other part, they're stupid. So, but you know,
so
the fact that there's no federal level anything stopping them. Yeah.
I mean, that's the division of powers.
Yeah. They're not wrong, but it's also that the system is broken. It doesn't mean, because the fact that we don't have a minister, like, look it up. Seriously, we don't. It's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed for Canada. I'm sorry.
The other element, what they've said was, you know, in 2015, it was, you know, nobody said it was unconstitutional. Constitutional then, sorry, 2000, you know, the why is it suddenly unconstitutional? With I think that's the basic legal idea, that if you haven't told me it's illegal before, it's not illegal now. That's how that works, right?
Okay.
Which is obviously not true. They argue that the changes does not infringe on the freedom of expression that relates to the teachers being able to do their teaching, and it does not deprive anyone of the constitutional values of life, liberty, and security of the person. And that's the argument being made here, by eradicating the LGBT protection, or the LGBT references of any kind, same-sex relationships, by doing to a massively outdated consent conversation, and a education that's based in a time, or with curricula, that it was written before a lot of human rights protections that were now in place.
Mm-hmm.
It means that those folks who have seen those protections introduced since then are no longer as safe. And, you know, and that's how you're born, but not everybody is born with, like, perfectly lined up chromosomes. Mm. And sometimes that you may identify as the other one, and just a exploratory conversation. What this now means is that there's no conversation like that at all.
Right.
And it's now the responsibility of some child who is trans to educate all of their peers, which is ridiculous. But also it means that there's nothing there stopping what would clearly be the consequence of ignorance. And we know what the consequence of ignorance is, especially with small children and young adults.
Well, I mean, I think young adults more so than small children when it comes to sexuality.
And the idea of security of the person. This decision by the Doug Ford's Conservative Party, it's alleged, has a consequence of LGBT youth in Ontario being unsafe.
I feel like this is, as much as we don't have a federal level Ministry of Education, we do have Health Canada. And I feel that you could make a case that they could step in, that there is a lack of information. A wonderful example that was given to me some time ago, that the term propaganda, this is going to seem like a tangent, but I am going to bring it back. The term propaganda was coined in the 1600s, I think. And for the longest time, propaganda was seen as a very positive thing. It's only since World War II that propaganda got its negative, not influence, its negative implication. Because if you're talking about good propaganda in the 1920s, it was stuff like, buy a new soap, wash your hands after you handle raw chicken. Like, every time you're on the bus and you see a thing that says cough into your elbow, that's propaganda. It's just information disseminated by the state. It's just the definition of propaganda. The fact that, you know, half the time it's lies or it's manipulating you.
Oh, it's Trump making a statement about a wall.
It's complicated. Complicated because he's wrong, but how is he wrong? But anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. The reason why I'm mentioning this is this is the information by the state on how to take care of your health is ingrained in Canadian society. We've been doing this for almost a century now because Canada does have health propaganda under the old term of propaganda, you know, like washing your hands, getting vaccinated. What else? Eating a healthy diet, the food pyramid is part of the health propaganda from the state, you know, and the food pyramid needs updating. Doesn't matter. Fact is, eat healthy. That's out there. So it is a part of the responsibility of the state because the Canadian state has taken it on as a responsibility to take care of the health and well-being of its citizens. So, I mean, you could just view this as an extension of that and not view it as an education thing per se, that it's more to do with health and well-being. And you could just sort of dump it onto them and...
So the issue, I mean, it is...
Write letters to your local representative. That's really what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, it is an educational issue.
It is
education policy. And I wanted to touch on the safety element again, and just before we wrap this up.
Because health and well-being is definitely a huge part of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network and the HIV/AIDS Legal Clinic of Ontario have also been granted intervenor status in this constitutional challenge.
Intervenor status.
Oh, okay. Yeah, not intervenor status.
Not intervenous, like, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They've been granted intervenor status in this challenge being brought against the provincial government.
Okay.
What they argue is that under the curriculum, students will not be taught up-to-date information about HIV, sexual orientation, gender identity, same-sex relationships, consent, But an effective response to HIV and other sexual issues require a frank, non-judgmental information about LGBT sex, sexuality, and HIV and other infections.
Hmm.
So they write that the decision to revert to the outdated curriculum is an attack on the Charter Rights of the People with HIV, because now they're not represented. The clients and communities we serve, including students with HIV and students who are family members with HIV, misinformation, lack of information, drive the stigma and create a greater vulnerability to acquiring and transmitting HIV. So their argument is that by removing the conversations about HIV and the conversations around same-sex transmission of HIV, particularly in Ontario, where men that have sex with men is one of the larger contributing factors in cases that of contracting HIV.
Right, yeah.
That it's one of those ideas that let's not talk about it because then it'll go away. Well, with HIV, it doesn't go away.
Oh, it's the opposite,
and it just spreads because nobody knows.
Yeah.
And that's the point here, is that this education is literally making people more vulnerable to HIV.
So basically that entire thing I said about state propaganda, someone's already done it.
Yeah.
Already stepping in. Yeah,
well,
saying that failure to educate people on how to take care of themselves will be harmful from a health perspective, from a health and well-being perspective.
Yeah. So it looks, we'll be following this case as it progresses. It's going to be quite an interesting one for sure.
Mm.
It literally is, you know, can a government, and this is a major challenge on a province's power.
Yeah.
And what we can see is this case will probably go all the way up to the Supreme Court. And it will have a major impact on how other provinces do their educational policy as well. Is not talking about consent a charter breach?
Right, yeah.
You know, and it could either, if the province wins, it could help stall a lot of this education across the whole of Canada. Mm. And if the province loses, we could see all of the other provinces being somersaulted into these topics. The potential impact nationwide is quite substantial.
I think we should probably get the Minister of Education to intervene.
Which one? I see what you did there, because there is no federal minister. We'll be right back after Spandau Ballet's Gold, which has a bit of a jewelry music theme this week. Like I said, this is Spandau Ballet Gold, and we'll be back just after this.
Thank you for coming home. Sorry that the chairs are all warm. I left them here, I could have sworn. These are my salad days, slowly being eaten away. Just another play for today. Oh, but I'm proud of you, but I'm proud of you. Nothing left to make me feel small. Luck has left me standing so tall. Gold, always believe in your soul.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And I want to talk about, I'm sure you knew that Maxime Bernier left the Conservative Party of Canada, the federal party.
Oh, of course. I absolutely knew that.
Of course you knew that. And is forming his own People's Party.
The People's Party?
Yeah, it's a libertarian party at its core. It's expected to do quite well out west.
Okay.
And they've announced that they're fronting somebody for the Burnaby by-election that's coming up. That particular person is called Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson.
Okay.
Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson.
That's kind of a soap opera name.
Laura Lynn has... It is quite a soap opera name.
I mean, you know, two gold stars to her parents for giving her kind of a cool name.
Laura Lynn has ran for the school board, has done a few other things as well, is a devout Christian.
Okay.
Kind of an ardent Christian.
Okay. An ardent one.
Yeah. Okay. And, well, worked briefly, or for a time at least, on the equivalent of an evangelical Christian flagship. I don't know if it's evangelical, actually.
Okay.
No, it's, it was the 700 Club Canada.
Oh, dear.
It's a spin-off of a Christian broadcasting network out of the States.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It left in 2017. It didn't do so well here in Canada.
No way.
And she left the 700 Club Canada after people kept complaining about her position on sexual gender identity and sexual orientation.
Right, okay.
Apparently, they were targeting her because of it.
Now, earlier when you said she was libertarian, I kind of have this, whenever anybody says libertarian, I have this instinct to say, what kind of libertarian?
Well, that's what makes her a bit of an odd choice on this one, is that she's sort of most known for her gender and sexual minority stance.
Right.
She believes that. She says, and I quote here, "I think the most important issue facing schools is that parents are highly alarmed and very upset that children are being taught gender fluid ideology. It has no place in school."
Okay.
That's what she had on her website when she was running for trustee.
Which school?
In Burnaby.
Like, if it's a Catholic school where, like, the Bible has all sorts of weird things in there about gender roles.
And shellfish.
Yeah, and shellfish. I mean, maybe, but if she's talking about all education in Canada, no. It's also, like, aren't libertarians supposed to be against the state or, like, intervening on state things? I don't know. This is what I know, okay? After a sense, technically, Bernie Sanders is kind of libertarian, and so is Ayn Rand. So when you're saying libertarian, that is a huge spectrum of possible beliefs. But it's just basically generally the government can't tell you what you can and can't do, and individuals shouldn't tell the government what they can and can't do. And that kind of falls outside of, like, this seems to be that she has a pet project that falls outside of that ideology. And if she were to say the state shouldn't educate kids, but if their parents want to tell them about gender fluid stuff, that's their business. But it doesn't sound like she's that kind of a person. I would disagree with that statement, but at least it would be consistent with her beliefs.
So what's really interesting as well is that apparently
she
ran multiple times or attempted multiple times to run for the Conservative Party.
Okay.
But they turned her down
twice. That's a bad sign.
Yeah.
Ooh, especially in BC. Yeah, because West Coast conservatism is a different breed of conservatism. It's a very... Yeah, that's... Libertarians, eh? Out west... It's I wish if anyone were to butt off of the Conservative Party, it would be the Reforms, because the Reform Conservatives, they're the kind of Conservatives I wouldn't vote for, but if they got in, I could get behind them. I'd rather vote for
someone else. Well, that's not who this is.
Oh, no.
This is somebody who even the Conservatives were like, yeah, no thanks.
Yeah.
She is up against, in this Burnaby South election, the NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh.
Okay.
Mainly because Jagmeet Singh didn't actually have a seat.
Okay.
He's the leader of a party, but he's not a politician.
Yeah.
He's not a member of parliament, sorry. Yeah. So this is the first opportunity that came up, and now they're running him there.
Okay.
Burnaby is, it'll be interesting to see how that shapes out.
It's hard to say. Although the leadership of the NDP is kind of going through a flux period because they're not really sure what the narrative is anymore, and they've lost the thread of their own story. And this has been going on for like 20, 30 years. But mind you, I'm very biased because I'm from Hamilton, which is this old NDP what's the word I'm looking for? Enclave? Not enclave, but, you know, a holdout, I guess you could say. And the NDP, to this day, the NDP in Hamilton, they're all old, original, like, union NDP, which is what they started off as in, like, the 1930s or something like that. So they're more about, you know, supporting the working classes and whatnot. But that's the local narrative of what the NDP are about, and that is not the provincial or federal narrative at all about when the NDP are about. I think the NDP are just the NDP, semicolon, for when you want to vote for the Libs but just can't. Like, it's... They don't really have... Nobody has a narrative anymore. Nobody really has a story to tell as a party. It's kind of sad.
So, I wanted to touch on some Danish news.
Danes,
okay. Yeah. No, it's pretty exciting news. And what it is they are introducing new laws to allow... The headline is, gay men can now donate blood in Denmark. And they're changing it so that they believe that...
Their own blood, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, yeah. They believe that their testing infrastructure is robust. They believe that people are generally truthful in when they're donating blood.
Right, yeah.
And what the new legislation includes is actually a form of waiting people for gay men, which is pretty much what we have here in Canada. Under the changes that the Liberal government made under Trudeau.
It's 6 months now, I think? 6 months of abstinence?
I think it's three, isn't it?
Three months, okay. Okay. Yeah.
But what the Danes are doing is that there's an exception. And that is if you have been in a relationship with one partner.
Oh.
So...
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so gay men in a relationship... Because, I mean, it's ridiculous that in Canada, there was a Calgary story where they had, I think, 2.5 to 3 days supply of O-type blood, and that was it.
Yeah.
They were desperate. They were like, we can't, like, we're going to run out.
Yeah.
And all the gay men in Calgary were like, whoa. It's not my fault, probably, you know, and it's...
I mean, if they really wanted to this is something I thought the community would be hilarious if it did, if during a blood run, just like thousands of gay men showed up and filled out the forms honestly and just watched them turn aside.
Yeah.
All of them and clog the lines with people they have to turn aside.
Yeah. 20 years, monogamous...
Mm.
Just one partner,
yeah.
No infections, and you'll be turned away at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have apparently the same risk profile as somebody who's, you know, hitting it up at a chemsex party every Tuesday. Which is ridiculous.
They don't do chemsex parties on Tuesdays. That is ridiculous.
I feel like GHB, it goes any days.
It's a Friday night phenomenon, because it takes a day and a half to get over the hangover.
Well... I think this could possibly point a way for the Liberal government to
that made navigate. Me sound way more sexual than I am. That's really, I know about that because I like biochem. Just to be clear, I'm not a gentleman of loose morals.
Oh, loose other elements. Now, the Liberal government kind of painted itself into a corner.
Right. Okay.
They said that this policy is discriminatory. You know, why no gay man's going to just sit around and cross their legs for 4 months just so they can donate blood.
Yeah.
Especially if they're in, you know, monogamous relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Straight people in monogamous relationships can donate blood.
Yeah.
So what's the issue here? It discriminates.
Well, it's more to the point that if you look at the actual risk factors and how things are playing out, like, for one, there's intergenerational differences. So, yes, there is a recent upturn in new rates of HIV in the gay community, but a lot of it's younger folks. If you're talking about people who are, like, 35 and above, it's a totally different story. A lot of them are still terrified. So, or, you know, wearing a condom or using PrEP, you know, there's a little bit more self-care involved. And a lot of that's intergenerational and whether or not you actually saw somebody dying of full AIDS. But yeah, so there's intergenerational stuff. And even then, let's say you are talking about a gay man, okay? Like, you could be a 21-year-old, just straight dude, sleeping around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine as far as the
blood donations go.
Yeah, yeah.
See you next week, Chad. Yeah, feel free absolutely. To come back. Yeah,
and like let's even step away from HIV for a minute and say like they're in a very high risk group for HPV, and they're in a high risk group for a whole bunch of other stuff that can HPV be transmitted by blood?
I mean, I am banned because I'm British, and at one point there were some mad cows there.
Yeah.
And also there was this disease with the dairy industry, so well, I mean...
They test it anyway! They have to test it anyway!
This is the thing that they don't say. We've tried to corner Canadian Blood Services and FEMA Quebec on whether or not... Are they testing all of the blood, or are they testing bits of batches to save time?
Right.
In which case you want to eliminate the potential risks. And if
well, they're going to do batch testing.
But if they are testing all of the blood, then what's the issue?
You know, even what I mean? Then, when they're doing batch testing, so the way that batch testing works is you take like one or two drops of blood from usually 10 bags, 10 units,
mm-hmm.
and then you run a test on that. So you only have to do one test. It cuts down on savings. And if it comes back positive, one of those 10...
Yeah.
Is, and you don't retest, you just throw out all 10. Because the chances of actually getting a positive is really, really low. So the 9 bags of good blood you're throwing away is actually not that inefficient in the grand scheme of things. So batch testing is, sometimes they do more, like sometimes they do 100 bags at a time. It depends on how the supply is and what they're, it's a bit unfortunate because there is waste involved, but if you're trying to balance practicality then, with eliminating waste...
What about the waste of all of the people not donating blood?
Well, the biggest waste is the people who aren't even allowed to provide those 9 bags that get thrown out in the first
Absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely.
Because if we could get more people...
You're lumping in people who have been living together with just each other for 30 years. It doesn't make any sense. We're turning all of those people away.
Or even if someone is sexually active, but they're very careful and they take care of themselves, test it anyway. It's just,
I mean, currently the only solution is to just cross your legs for 3 months and then maybe.
That doesn't work.
You just have to save up.
No.
To donate
You need blood. To staple your knees together. That'll
do it.
Yeah.
On New Year's Eve, had a big New Year's Eve special.
Okay.
And the news story was Doctor Who introduces new gay character. And I was like, where was I? Like, I watched it. I didn't notice.
Mm-hmm.
I must have missed it. And apparently, they took a stopwatch. And the character, who's a security guard...
Right.
...says, oh, I was telling my boyfriend so-and-so. And then they clicked the stopwatch. And within 11 seconds, he was dead.
Okay.
So I think it is a record for the BBC in terms of killing off a gay character. And the reason why this is an issue is that... Is why?
Well, it's like the portrayal of black men in action movies in the 80s, where it's like, they're going to be the first to die.
Yeah.
Or they're going to make it to the end. There's no gray area. They're either the first or the last. It's sort of like in a horror movie when you have that woman who's a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
They're either going to be the sole survivor or they're going to be the first gone. There's nothing in between. And it's very tropey, and it's kind of, it undermines... it undermines good writing, but it also undermines the depiction of autonomy and depiction of humanity.
It's the barrier gaze trope is what it is. And for me, I'm sat there going, why did they have to say, I told my boyfriend XYZ? Because then you're like, oh, cool. You know, the gay community, all the homos are like, oh, wow. This is a cool new character.
Mm-hmm.
And then 11 seconds later, he's dead. If they'd have written it so the guy goes, oh, I told my friend XYZ and he died in 11 seconds, nobody would care.
I think the way they did Captain Jack was much better. Like, I liked I don't like the new Doctor because I don't like Doctor Who in general. I find it too much of the wrong kind of camp. I liked the David Tennant years, but the David Tennant years was written by someone who embraced the camp and played into it in a different way, like leaned into it in a way that I liked better. But during that time, you did have Captain Jack and Russell Tovey, as much as it turned out that in his private life, he's a garbage human being, did play an openly gay man in the show. Well, not an openly gay man. He was a man who was seduced by Captain Jack and didn't mind. So, I mean, so, that's as gay as Doctor Who gets. It was written
by Russell T. Davis.
Okay.
Who wrote Queer as Folk, the original series in the UK. He wrote this, and then... Oh my gosh, it was a recent one that did really well, that had... I forget what
Banana
it was.
Banana and Cucumber.
He also wrote that.
Yeah.
And there was another series he just wrote, and it's going to bug me if I can't remember what it is.
Although Banana was garbage. Cucumber was the main show, and Banana was like supposed to be supplemental stuff, but it was just like, it's supposed to be like in-character vlogs of the characters, and it wasn't great. But yeah. The original Queer as Folk, I'm going to have to say, is superior over the American one, because the British one was a miniseries. It had a beginning, a middle, and end, and it had a point. And then the American one just... It was a sitcom without a laugh track, and it was kind of hot garbage. And, no. But I did recognize half the people in the background, because it was filmed in Toronto while I lived in the area. So I actually recognized, like, half the extras going in the background, like, you know...
You're like, oh, Jim, hi! That's funny.
Yeah.
Anyways, I can't remember. He was involved with something recently, and it also got a lot of praise.
Scandal.
Yeah. So I wanted to also mention something about, like, looping back. You just poked my finger.
Don't point at me. I will pull your finger and make you fart.
I did want to mention something else in terms of like a bit of a tangent. Now, cast your mind back to North Carolina and the whole, I think it was the HB2 film, HB2 was the bill, okay. House Bill 2.
Okay.
And it was essentially an attempt at removing all LGBT protections in the state of North Carolina. And all of these companies were being pressured to be like, is this really where you want your business?
Yeah.
You know, this is what they're saying. They're saying that there's no protection for LGBT folks.
And it wasn't that they were removing protections. It's that they were removing protections and explicitly excluding them from protections at the same time. Because there's a lot of states that don't explicitly mention LGBT protections, but there's a difference between explicitly failing to explicitly protect and deliberately explicitly excluding from protection, which is what was happening at the time. Well, at least at the state level, even though individual.
Well, the issue was is that a lot of the.
I can't believe I remember this story as well as I'm probably wrong about something, but I...
Introduced...
Do they have parishes or counties in Carolina?
I think it's counties.
Okay.
They introduced their own... In North Carolina, a lot of the counties introduced their own protections. Okay. So it went sort of city to city to town to town.
Right.
And eventually, most of the state, in a lot of the cities and a lot of the towns, had quite robust protections because the municipalities had collectively come together. If we're talking about urban areas, they're typically more Democrat or center-leaning. But in the state of North Carolina, the governorship is heavily dominated, and the state legislature is heavily dominated by politicians who are elected by the rural communities.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So they overturned it, and they also prevented urban areas from introducing any protections themselves.
And the original cascade of... sort of city and county level protections was egged on by What's-Her-Face, who refused to fill out the paperwork. That's a separate issue.
I just remembered, by the way, I finally got to where I was looking.
Right.
Russell T. Davis wrote A Very English Scandal, which just won a Golden Globe for supporting actor by Ben Whishaw. It is a BBC miniseries about... Norman Scott, who was a gay guy who had a relationship with an MP. I think it was the gist of the Perfomo affair. It's a huge scandal in Britain. It's a really brilliant miniseries from the BBC. It is absolutely fantastic. And the fact that this BBC miniseries landed Whishaw a supporting acting Globe, that's pretty impressive. Anyway, that's what Russell T. Davis recently did.
On a vaguely similar note, the recent Spider-Man movie. Spider-Man fans who've just been reading the comics for decades say that the newest one, not with Andrew Garfield, what's the new guy's name? The new Spider-Man. Tom Holland. Yeah. They say that that is the first Spider-Man they have ever seen that was actually satisfactory as a Spider-Man fan. For multiple reasons, one being like he's the first guy to nail the character, like the one in the mid 2000s with what's his face,
Tobey
Maguire. They said that he nailed Peter Parker, but his Spider-Man was weak. And then Andrew Garfield had a really good Spider-Man, but his Peter Parker was weak. And Tom Holland, they say there's three things. First of all, he's strong on both accounts. Secondly, he's a
beautiful man.
He has a New York accent, and none of the others.
He's English.
I know, but in the movie, he has a New York accent, so they're driving home that he's a local boy. And the third one, bearing in mind that a lot of these Spider-Man fans are straight men, they say he's the first one with the right booty. Mm. Because Spider-Man is known for his fantastic butt. Other characters in the Marvel Universe comment
on Spider-Man's Deadpool butt. Flirt with
Spider-Man? The Spidey pool storyline. And it's so fascinating how many straight men are fascinated by a lot of this stuff, because it's in canon that a lot of the other characters in the Marvel Universe note how amazing Spider-Man's butt is. And Tom Holland, I've seen screenshots of him in the spandex, and I don't think that's styrofoam rubber.
So this actually segues really nicely into the other thing I wanted to talk about.
About butts?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The reason why is there was this like cheap, trashy story that came out about a go-go dancer, I think he was also a male purveyor of adult entertainment.
Okay.
Very one-on-one scenario.
Oh, okay, so we're not talking about cinema.
He apparently has decided or announced to the world that he is now straight.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And all of the sort of gossipy gay sites were like, oh my God, so-and-so says he's now straight, even though he was a gay go-go dancer. Yeah. And everyone's like, and I'm like, why is this a story? I don't really care about this man's life.
Yeah. Like 90% of the quote-unquote actors in the Ukrainian quote-unquote cinema, gentlemen cinema, are straight and married and...
Mm-hmm.
You can tell because that's not how men kiss men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just acting.
Yeah. Oh, it's so sad to watch. Don't watch anything from Eastern Europe.
But what we're seeing now is a conversation emerging about can you have intercourse with other men and still identify as straight?
Okay.
Now, my issue here is there's sort of two conversations being morphed into one. One conversation is about this particular individual who is very much in the gay culture of the city he's in. He's going to the parties. He's like very much adopting all of the social cues of that particular culture and is a gay guy and has been, but now identifies as straight. Now, he could have identified as a pineapple for all I care. I don't know the guy. It doesn't mean anything to
me. That's the thing. Like, does he have the right to? Well, strictly speaking, you have the right to identify as anything you want to. Mm-hmm. The question about whether or not that identity has merit is a different...
Well, my issue here is not necessarily about how he identifies. Like I said, he could identify as a pineapple. Wouldn't bother me one way or the other. It's that internalized homophobia coming out. We see it. We've seen it a lot with sort of distancing and straight acting gay people and mask for mask. That all, It all relates to the I'm not like a femme gay. I'm not like, you know, a 30 paces. That's such a gay man gay. You know, that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is rooted in misogyny because, of course, a lot of these behaviors are attributed with being particularly gay and more effeminate behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And I just take issue with the idea that being gay is something that you shouldn't be.
Well, so the way that I would approach this is that not everybody has the same concept about what it means to identify. You know, the very core concept of identity is not universal. And this is something that I've run into many, many times, is that there's a lot of people where they say, you know, gay is not what I am, it's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So if he doesn't do that anymore, if he's like, you know, I'm not going to have gay sex anymore for mm-hmm. whatever reasons, that's not what I do anymore. Therefore, you can't say that I'm gay because I don't do gay stuff anymore, that they're not performing gayness, whatever that means in their own mind. That kind of makes sense. Like when, again, I know I've mentioned this on air multiple times. When I lived in Tokyo, I knew dozens of men who had sex with men who identify as straight anymore.
People evolve.
Yeah, people change.
And, you know, and but
said it with an air of judgment, like, ew, I'm not like that anymore, versus like, you know, that's just not who I am anymore. Like, those are two different
statements. I don't know if it's really how he is being portraying it. I think it also, my critique here is how the media is covering it.
Oh, okay, okay.
And that the idea of like, oh my God, he's like post-gay, he's so over it. So over what? Why is it something that we need to be over or past? Mm-hmm. And the other problem is that we're kind of convoluting it with, and this is a different article that came out in Attitude in the UK, about people. We're seeing some surveys now where I think it was one survey had like up to half of young people in the UK did not identify as exclusively straight.
Right, yeah.
They're like, you know what? What comes my way comes my way. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say no before I get to know you. And that sort of approach is just becoming more common in younger people.
I think it's a little bit more romantic. It's probably more of an any port.
It's more radio friendly.
I was going to say any port in a storm.
Yeah.
You know, also known as a mouth is a mouth. And it's, there's, I think it's probably more like that.
But it's not just that. We're seeing more young men in the UK and in Canada not being closed-minded to seeing what things would look like in that scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
And being more exploratory. And then being like, you know what? I identify as a straight man, like as a culturally straight man.
Yeah.
Because there is a cultural iconography, there is a cultural language to being gay, there is, mm-hmm. we have our own festivals, our own holidays, our own language, you know.
Well, it's the difference between identifying as gay and acknowledging yourself as being gay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something about myself. It's like, I, Sebastian, do not identify as a tall person, but I know that I am one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's, my tallness is not a core aspect of my identity. There's going to be people out there where their sexuality is not necessarily a core aspect of their identity. And that's fine, so long as they're not weird about other people where it is a part of who they are. You know?
I mean,
because I do know people where being tall is a part of their core identity, and part of me is like, okay, that's bizarre, but you know, whatever.
Who do you?
No skin off my back, I don't care.
So the other challenge, I think, is it's also like millennials reinventing straight but not narrow and heteroflexible. And, you know, these are all terms that became in vogue and then drifted away again. Yeah. And then there was a new word and it became in vogue and it drifted away again. And now this is the, oh, I'm straight, but I do gay things.
Yeah,
it's it's literally describing the same thing. And as somebody who is a millennial, I very much think that this is just millennials reinventing that whole concept again. I think it's interesting. Let us know, folks, what do you think, you know, in our audience. Is having homosexual intercourse mean you're gay? Is being gay a cultural thing? Is refusing to be gay but doing those behaviors internalized homophobia?
I do like your distinction, though, about like the real conversation here is not about that guy.
No.
The conversation is about other people's reactions to that, and that other people's reactions was a little bit bizarre of like, well, first of all, technically, it's none of your damn business. And secondly, he's allowed to do that, you know? He's allowed to reflect on his life and realize that's not who he is anymore. A couple of years, I don't know the guy. But who knows? We don't know him. Who are we to say? So, I don't know. But yeah, definitely the fact that people are reacting to him so strongly about something that doesn't affect their own personal lives. Just if you're to roll your eyes and say, oh, me too, like, that's one thing. But to actually go out of your way to speak out against it, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
You read a book.
I mean,
find something to do with
it. Part of that is also what we're doing here. You know, it's that conversation around, you know,
we're talking about the people who are talking about the guy. So we're two steps removed. And so therefore, our hands are clean.
I mean, I don't know if I would go that far, but knowledge is complicated because you know, young people do things, they explore. Everybody knows that. That's like just teenagers and just young people in general. Mm-hmm. And I think people need to be given the space to do that and not be hemmed in and boxed in. We've run out of time, I think. We're going to be playing out with Diamond Rings. Show me your stuff. I do like Diamond Rings. Mm-hmm. And it's playing on that golden diamond conversation we were talking okay. about earlier. And next week, we'll be picking up with some more news. There were a lot of things we didn't get to this week. But that's as is the way of life, I suppose.
I guess so.
Yeah. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. Thanks for listening.
Just what I said.